Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. More and more women are flying solo, literally. Industry reports show that solo travel by women is growing, with one study finding that female solo travelers outnumbered men by almost 2-1. Some are embarking on eat, pray, love style trips of self-discovery, while others are traveling to remote corners of the world. Solo travel does come with risks, though, especially for women, and there are no comprehensive statistics about violence against female travelers. Still, women are ready to take on the world and the adventures that await them. So this hour on Point, going it alone, women and solo travel. And you can join us. Are you a woman who's traveled internationally alone? What's your story? What have the challenges been that you've faced? Or what have been some of your greatest adventures? What have you learned about yourself? And what advice do you have for others who maybe want to take a solo trip? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, we'll start today in New York with Teriro Mzezwa, travel reporter for The New York Times. You can find a link to a story that Teriro co-wrote headlined Adventurous Alone Attacked. That link is at our website, onpointradio.org. Teriro, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Meghna.
So first of all, let me ask you, the headline was quite grabbing for your story, Adventures Alone and Attacked. What inspired you to take a look at safety issues around female solo travelers?
Well, my co-writer, Megan Specia, and I have both traveled a lot solo, and Megan was having this conversation about solo female travel with an editor on our international desk, and I had expressed interest to my editor, Amy Vershup, about looking into some of the attacks that had happened with women while backpacking. I think at that point, the most recent story had been Grace Mullane. And we decided to come together and work on this. And really, we learned a lot in the process. And I guess, you know, that headline was quite grabbing and alarming. But our story, while we told the stories of women who were alone and attacked, was also really hitting on this idea that women still are traveling. It was still inspiring women to go out there and see the world. It wasn't meant to tell people to stay home and not go anywhere.
Right. I mean, and in fact, they're traveling in an ever greater numbers, which we'll talk about why in a minute here. But you mentioned Grace Mullane. Can you just remind us what happened to her?
Yes, Grace was a British backpacker. She was in Australia and New Zealand, and on her trip, she went missing, and that's how it was reported at first. Her family traveled to try and track her down, and it turned out that she had been killed.
Yeah, and there have been other recent very high-profile tragedies. Two women in, Morocco?
Yes.
Who were in the mountains of Morocco who were also killed?
Yes, there were. And an even more recent example is someone that we looked into was Carla Stefaniak, who was American Venezuelan. And she was traveling in Costa Rica. This was in November. And she was with her friends. She stayed for one extra night. And she stayed in an Airbnb that was secure. She essentially took all the right steps, if you will. She stayed in an Airbnb with 24-hour security. She made sure she was close to the airport. She took every precaution. And she talked to her best friend, Laura Jamie, before she was supposed to get on her flight. And the night before, she showed her friend these earrings she'd bought on the trip. And she said she was going to see her at home in Florida the next day. And of course, the sad thing about that story is that Carla never made it home. And in that case, it's actually the security guard at the Airbnb that she stayed at who's being investigated for her death.
Yeah. So, I mean, in that case, from your reporting, we find that the security guard had access to all the units, right, where she was staying, and that hadn't necessarily gone through a background check. So Carla's family is also holding Airbnb to account here.
Certainly. And I think that's another important aspect of this that we looked at was that sometimes people on Airbnb will remove a post and then repost that location with a different name, a different location. And Airbnb spoke to us and said that that is something they've looked into and they're doing the best, they do the best that they can to keep travelers safe.
Mm. So we'll talk throughout this hour about steps women can and do take to try and keep themselves as safe as possible as they're globetrotting around the world on their own. But Tariro, you are the travel reporter for the New York Times. I just want to ask you about your own experiences. When you're on reporting trips, do you generally go alone?
I do. So I'm new to this specific position. I just started in January, but I've been traveling for a long time and I've gone on a lot of solo trips all over the world. And I'm always excited to see the world. And I will say, like, working on this story made me really nervous. I was so paranoid. And I've had to calm myself down and say, you know, like, I can still go to these places. I can still travel alone. But there are precautions that I can take. Like, if I'm staying in an Airbnb, I want to look for a super host. Sometimes I need to just spend the extra money. It's going to kill me to do it. Spend the extra money to stay in a hotel with 24-hour security, depending on where I am. But this hasn't, like, dimmed my desire to travel. I'm just trying to be smarter about it.
I see. So I was going to ask you, were there sort of a list of precautions that you had taken before? But it sounds like you're actually just adding things now to think about every time you step on an airplane.
Oh, yes. I was like a totally careless traveler. I was like, I'm packing up. I'm going. I would pack at the last minute. One of those people like rushing to the airport. I'm like, OK, I'm ready to go. And I don't need anything. Not making the smartest choices while traveling either. I was certainly a person who'd be like, I made friends today on this trip. Great. Like, who are these people? Not thinking about it in the way that I'm thinking about it now, which is, oh, okay, let me make sure I have all the things before. You know, let me pack ahead of time, make sure I've got some of these extra things. We had a reader who wrote to us and said, pack a doorstop. You know, you can put it on the inside of your room. It's such a tiny thing to take with you. So now I'm like, okay, maybe I should do that. And checking in when I get to a place. I love the thrill of like getting to a place and just like getting in a cab or hopping on a bus. But now I'm thinking about it in terms of like, you know, maybe take the Uber that's tracked, or if you take a taxi, make sure you check in with somebody when you get there so they know you're there. Those kinds of things.
Okay. And so where are some of the places that you've been?
Oh, my goodness. So I've traveled all over. I traveled all over Italy because I lived there for 3.5 years. And I've been, I was like most recently, well, not most recently, but last summer I was in Bali, which was a great experience. I was there with a friend, actually, but we split up for a lot of the trip just because we had a lot of things that we didn't necessarily want to do together. I've been to like Morocco. I've been so many European countries. And in Southern Africa, I'm from Zimbabwe. So I've also been to like Zambia and South Africa. I haven't traveled as much through South America and as Asia as I would like to. But hopefully soon I'll be able to do that.
I'm sure you will. Well, Tariro Mazeswa, stand by for just a moment. We are talking about the growing numbers of women who are traveling solo and, you know, the thrill and joy of discovery of exploring the world on your own, but also the attendant, perhaps extra risks that women are in when they are traveling on their own and, you know, what to do about it, how to keep yourself safe as you are discovering our wonderful world. Tariro, hang on here for just a second because I want to bring into the conversation Carolyn Finney. She's joining us from Lexington, Kentucky. She's a storyteller, author, and cultural geographer, has backpacked solo through Africa and Asia, and is author of Black Faces, White Spaces, Reimagining the Relationship of African Americans to the Great Outdoors. Carolyn Finney, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. So how long have you been an inveterate traveler?
Oh, before I was born. I love to talk about this because it's not usually what people ask me to talk about. But back in the late 80s, early 90s, I became obsessed with it. I became obsessed of reading about travel adventures, particularly with women going solo. And then I first did a backpacking trip around the world back when you could buy an around the world plane ticket for not a lot of money. And I didn't do that one alone. I was married at the time. But after that, we were no longer married, and that's another conversation. I then saved my money and did a backpacking trip for 6 months through East Africa. Then I went back and did another 2 months in Southern Africa. Then I went back, and I ended up living a year and a half in Nepal, so spent a lot of time in Nepal as well. And there's some Europe in there and some other places as well, but that's the short version.
Okay. I'm tantalized. Yeah, no. I want to know more. But so, I mean, since we're talking about sort of ways that women can stay aware and keep themselves safe as they're in foreign countries and foreign cultures as well. I want to talk about the cultural aspect of it here in a second. I mean, have you had any experiences that were a little uncomfortable in your solo travels?
Well, and it's funny. Yes. I would have to say yes. But less so to do with, you know, my gender than perhaps to do with my race, to be honest. In part because first of all, let me say this. If you decide to travel solo, it's not about being comfortable. And I understand there's a difference between being uncomfortable and being unsafe, right? So I want to put that out there. Mm. I can tell you as someone, you know, I was traveling, doing a big bulk of my travel in the late 80s and in the 90s before social media. You know, I had my Lonely Planet guides and I would kind of decide where I was going to stay. I would make choices. Like, I wouldn't stay in the hostel. I preferred to stay kind of one step up from that so I could still have my own room if I didn't meet people along the way. I wouldn't do things like stay in train stations overnight. And, you know, I would save enough money so I wouldn't have to go there. And I would always have my round trip plane ticket. So if I had to come home for any reason, I would, and even if all my money ran out or got stolen or whatever would happen, you know, that I could do that. But I want to say that even though I was dressed like any quote-unquote Western backpacker, as an African-American woman, I would never see anybody who looked like me. And most of the time, people wouldn't think that I was from the United States, including other Americans. I would get mistaken for Israeli, Maori, Brazilian. And I enjoyed it on one level because I was just like, oh, yes, I'm just a global citizen. but on the other sense, I want to say going through security at certain countries like Israel, I got strip searched. I mean, there was places, and even coming back into the United States, particularly from Asia, I would get strip searched. I mean, it was just a way that people didn't believe that I would be doing this, even though I had the backpack. And I look like any other backpacker except for the color of my skin.
Interesting. Well, you know, we just have to take a really quick break here. And I want to pick up on that thought when we come back. So Carolyn Finney and Teriru Mazeswa, stand by here for a moment. We are talking about women traveling solo in increasing numbers. And we want to hear from you. What's your pro tip on how to have that adventure of a lifetime and stay safe as well? We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about the ever-increasing number of women who are traveling solo around the world and the particular reasons why we're seeing growth in that number, and also some of the risks that women may face when they're traveling alone and what to do to stay as safe as possible. We want to hear from you about your solo travel adventures. Maybe even some of your misadventures if you want to share them, and your pro tips on how to stay as safe as you can while you're exploring planet Earth. And we're joined today by Teriru Mazeswa. She's the travel reporter for the New York Times. Carolyn Finney is also with us. She's a storyteller, author, and cultural geographer, author of Black Faces, White Spaces, Reimagining the Relationship of African Americans to the Great Outdoors. And Teriru, before the break, you were hearing Carolyn talk about some of her early solo travel adventures and maybe having experiences that were more driven by race than her gender. And I was just wondering if you've had similar experiences.
Yes, I have. Also, as a Black woman traveling, there is that sense of people being, like, surprised that you're out there doing this.
Yes.
But also just like a sense of shock, like, wait, what are you doing? And, you know, this is also something we looked at in our story. I spoke with a number of Black women, but we focused on Jessica Nabongo, who's on this trip. She's on a mission to be like the first like recorded Black woman to travel to every country in the world. And she's planning to finish that trip in October. So she's really getting through this list. But she's traveled to more than 50 countries alone. I think by now she's close to 60. And she said to me that one of her greatest anxieties, one of her greatest fears about traveling as a Black woman, she gave the scenario that she could be running down the street in Italy. She said she could see it happening in, like, Milan, running down the street, screaming, looking for help, and nobody, she worries that nobody would help her because of the color of her skin, because they would assume that she is a prostitute. And that's an experience that, you know, I haven't had that exact experience, but I have found that in a lot of European countries, people assume that you are a sex worker before anything else.
Carolyn, what do you think?
Yes. Well, I've had that experience, but I've had it in Uganda, actually. I've had it in Uganda and Madagascar that they thought I was a sex worker. I was sitting in a sort of regular average restaurant in Kampala with a white man who worked for Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders. You have to remember, and we were both young, both in our just casual, I always say, backpacker gear. And the waiters wouldn't wait on us. They were Black waiters, Black African. And finally, we found out why, because they thought I was a sex worker, because they couldn't – I had to pull out my passport, show that I had my own money, because they couldn't imagine that I was – as a Black woman, I was paying for myself, even though they'd seen many other Western backpackers. In Madagascar, I was on the beach, and it was a Malagasy woman, and she didn't say it to me as an insult. You know, she just – she kind of said, so, you know, what part of Africa are you from? You're here working, you know, working, quote. And I had to say, no, that's not what I'm doing. I'm traveling. I'm backpacking. It's just interesting that there's something about the skin color that throws people off. I mean, I had an American man in Kathmandu want to take a photo of me to show his wife.
What?
Because he couldn't believe it.
That happens
it's
a crazy. Lot. I get a lot of that.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yes.
What did you tell him?
I told because he was this older man who looked like he had a lot of money, and he was talking to me, and I knew I was just he was kind of I became this exotic thing for him, that why I normally would be like, oh, let's take a picture together. He wanted a picture for me. I said 5 rupees, and he thought I was joking. And I said, no, you pay me 5 rupees, you can take a picture. And he just kind of looked stunned. He didn't pay me the 5 rupees. He didn't get a photo.
Well, Carolyn and Tarira, look, we've got phone callers pouring in here, so let's go to some of them. Joan is calling from Hanawha Falls, New York. Joan, you're on the air.
Hi there. I really appreciate this topic, because sometimes in my lifetime I have felt that I was doing something crazy, when I actually highly recommend traveling alone. When I travel alone, I can do exactly what I want, exactly when I want, and I can plan my itinerary without having to take anybody else's. For example, people get a little bit grouchy sometimes when they travel. And so, you know, I can just maintain my good mood as I see fit.
And so where have you gone, Joan, in your many years of travel?
I have. I traveled abroad as a student. And that trip, you know, I was on my own making my way from upstate New York, traveling by bus to New York City, getting a taxi from the terminal to the JFK airport, negotiating all of that alone, and then finally being in Paris. When I was in Paris, I was certainly safe because I was staying in a student dorm. However, from Paris, I took many trips by myself, day trips, vacation trips, traveling to Italy, traveling to Germany, and then later on in life, traveling to places like Costa Rica and back to France again. To Spain. So always staying in major cities, though, you know, pretty big cities.
Interesting.
So. Jones, and youth hostels, I never, ever had a problem in a youth hostel. Of course, I'm not a youth anymore, but I recommend them. I feel like they are very safe places to go. The one thing that one has to do, whether man or woman, whenever you're traveling alone or with a group, you have to plan ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You have to prepare for eventualities. I think that tip about bringing the doorstop, that's genius.
Yeah.
You know, I would never even think of something like that.
Well, so Joan, I'm just going to take it back from you there, but thank you so much for your call. Carolyn and Tariro, one of the things that Joan said that I wanted to explore with both of you is she's thus far mostly stayed in big cities or urban areas. What's your experience? Tariro, I'll start with you. What's your experience? And you know, it seems like a logical place to start. And also, there's so many amazing cities around the world. But, you know, what about for folks who also maybe want to visit more rural places in different countries?
I think it's a great idea to go to big cities. I have mostly traveled to big cities, and if I've gone outside of those perimeters, I've been with someone. But I also understand the desire to go, you know, off the beaten path, which is something a lot of people want to try to do. So I think that's worth exploring as well. But maybe don't do that part of it alone. Or if you are doing it alone, you know, take certain precautions to make sure that you're safe doing that.
Yeah. And Carolyn, are we though, like, creating kind of a false dichotomy here of safety between urban and rural environments, though, in different countries?
Well, I think there are different kinds of safety. I mean, I've done both. I mean, I'm from New York. I love the cities, but I lived in a village in Nepal for a year and a half. I lived on a woman's farm in Kenya for 6 months. I've also gone to the little island off the coast, you know, those kinds of things that would not be considered urban. But I really want to, you know, agree with Tariro in terms of if I think about that, I don't think I was ever alone when I did those things. You know, it was either something organized or I had met other backpackers to do that. One of the things I want to say about traveling alone, it's hard to stay alone because I become very accessible. So for me, it's about my level of alertness, awareness, my ability to sort of deeply listen, but also to be open, because for me, that's the beauty of travel. It's why I love it so much. It's now why I do it. I travel every week, and I've tried to have turned this into work. I said the ideal was, can I get paid doing what I love to do and get to travel, which for me is the thing, right? And it requires you to be open because it's a risk. The minute you step outside your door, it is a risk. And I think there's a way that we can think of risk not simply as something bad is going to happen, but something that we couldn't have imagined is going to happen that's going to be really amazing. So it's kind of walking that tension in a very particular way.
Well, can I just jump in here for a second? Because I think what you're saying is really, really interesting and absolutely spot on, right? You don't travel, most people don't travel just to stay in their comfort zone, right? By definition, it's to explore, to get out of that comfort zone, to be in an unusual environment, to learn about things that you've never had firsthand experience of, which is kind of maybe positively discomforting a little bit. But let me ask you, how do you... Maybe this is the same thing, the same set of skills that we need when we step outside our door on any particular day. But sort of how do you know when to trust your instincts about certain environments, especially when the cultural norms might be completely different?
Well, some of that for me is when you do – I think the caller mentioned this.
Yeah.
It's about doing the homework a little bit. Like for me, it was what can I learn about the culture? You can't learn everything from a book, but it can tell you some things about how you should be dressed or how they suggest you might dress, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. So you sort of have some basic understanding and, again, some openness around this. And I want to say that – you know, again, the idea of risk, the story about the woman who was concerned, you know, she could be running down the streets of Milan and because she's black, nobody is going to, you know, help her. I had that happen in Seattle when I fractured my ankle in the middle of, you know, I was middle of the afternoon in the street walking with people and not a single person would help me. Right. I was kind of bent over, thought I was going to pass out. And so these things can happen anywhere. They can happen in a city. They can happen in a rural area, in the suburbs, in the United States or outside of the United States. So part of the dichotomy that I want to kind of challenge is that just because it's somewhere that's unfamiliar and different from what we're used to doesn't mean that the risk is necessarily higher.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Grain, who's calling from Appleton, Maine. Grain, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling. I recently traveled to Mumbai by myself. It was my first time actually really leaving America by myself, and I went for 2 weeks, and it was quite an experience.
Wow.
And totally different. Totally different culture, everything. I did a lot of research before I went.
And so how was it? I mean, India is a very, very different place.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was... amazing for a lot of reasons. I mean, I learned a lot of things. I saw a lot of things. I was white in a place where I was the minority, which was an interesting experience for me. something different, and people were very aware of it. I was made very aware of my whiteness, which is probably a good lesson to learn.
Every time I travel to India quite a bit with my family, my parents, and every time I go there, I'm made aware of my Americanness, even though I have brown skin.
Yes. I'm not even gonna lie to you, there were certain public places where I said A a lot, and people just assumed I was Canadian, and they were nicer to me. India was not really nice to me as an American when I first got there. But I went there for dental work. And so I had like a connection there from that, because I went there for a specific reason, and they gave me a lot of information.
Uh-huh.
And I let the hotel that I was staying in know that I was alone. They were extraordinarily solicitous of me. They like literally called and checked on me every day. They got cars for me, told me places I shouldn't go, told me places I could go, frequently tried to find other people that were traveling to hook me up with so I wasn't alone. I had a great experience.
Yeah.
I did have a latte thrown in my face, though, walking down the street.
Why?
And I assume it was because it was the one time I didn't cover my arms, and I'm guessing that's probably why.
Oh, interesting.
I don't really know. A very well-dressed man in classic Indian garb just walked up and tossed his kept walking.
Well, Grain, thank you so much for your call. You know, Chariro and Carolyn Grain's experience traveling in India alone, it reminds me, I've had, obviously, since my family is Indian, I've had lots of experience traveling there with them. But several years ago, last time I was there, we had this really uncomfortable thing happen where we were in this hotel. I was with my parents, right? And using the bathroom, the shower in the hotel, and my mom was in the bathroom, and she came bursting out of the bathroom, like yelling. And of course, she speaks like five different Indian languages, so it was like yelling at everybody in the hotel, because through the grate at the top of the bathroom, the ventilator grate, she actually saw a pair of eyes, like someone was watching. And so we weren't alone. We were a family, but there are all sorts of, again, this is one of the risks you take with travel, but there are all sorts of ways that you can be surprised or put in danger when you're in an unfamiliar place. I mean, Tarira, what do you think about that?
I think that's one of those things. It's like you can't plan for it. You have no idea. Like, there was just no way to prepare for that. But I think your mother's reaction was a great one. And it reminds me of one of the tips we got from a reader who said, act erratic if something is happening. You know, sometimes, and she said, sometimes you don't want to make a scene. You want to, like, act like everything's okay and get out of it quietly. But really, it could help you to just make a fuss and scream and say, like, this thing is happening right now and it shouldn't be happening.
Yeah. Make a lot of noise. And I'll give my mom credit. She absolutely did that in like five different languages. But you know, there are also presumptions about women's bodies, which are just culturally different from place to place. And what I've always struggled with and haven't quite, I don't really have it, the balance right, is when to tell, like, someone's just being friendly in a more physical way, which is culturally acceptable in places, versus what might make me uncomfortable as an American woman. So, I mean, Carolyn, how do you navigate that?
Well, I think that, you know, I had so many stories. I also have a story in India as well. It's funny to think about. This is just going to sound bizarre, but I was sitting on an elephant, and the Indian guide sitting behind me had his hands on my waist, but he kept moving them up. And I kept moving him down, and I was on the elephant. So really, you know, there was nothing I could do but keep moving. You know, I didn't want to get erratic on the elephant, right? Until I got off the elephant. But I also had something like that happen in Egypt, in Cairo. And I did the thing I don't like to do in my regular everyday life, but I started yelling because this guy wouldn't stop following me. And I just turned around on the street and started being erratic, I guess. And that made him stop in his track. It drew attention to us. He just stopped. And then he just stopped following me. So I think that's a really good idea. And again, I just want to emphasize, I've had that stuff happen here in New York, right, as well. So where, you know, men feel like it's okay to touch my body or to come into my personal space. And I think there's a way, even if it's culturally appropriate for that culture to get closer than they might do here. It's not like you become invisible just because you're a visitor to the country.
Yeah.
I don't think – you don't give up who you are and your own sense of safety, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a way – I try to – you know, I go into everything thinking that, you know, people are basically decent. If I say something that I need this or I don't need them to do this, I'm giving them the opportunity to make a different choice, knowing that sometimes you do have that person that doesn't care what you have to say, and that can happen anywhere.
Yeah. Well, Tariro, we've got about a minute to go before we have to take a break here, and I know I've got to let you go. Is there another, like, great tip that you got from readers after your story came out?
You know, I was really I'm like, this isn't necessarily a tip, but I was struck by how many people Megan and I spoke with who said, trust your gut. And I think it also gets to your question right now, or your question a moment ago, which is, how do you know, because of various cultural norms, if it's okay for you to say if something isn't okay, or how to respond, or if somebody's pressing you, or anything like that. So trust your instincts. If something feels wrong, it might be wrong, and you're better off just taking a moment.
Well, Tariro Mazeswa is the travel reporter for the New York Times, and you can find a link to her story, which is headlined Adventurous Alone Attack. That link is at onpointradio.org, as well as great tips that she and her co-author got from readers of the Times as well. Tariro, it's been really wonderful to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Carolyn Finney, stand by here for just a moment. Got to take a quick break. We are talking about the increasing number of women traveling solo around the world, and we're looking for your pro tips on where to go, what to do, and how to stay safe. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking this hour about the increasing number of women who are solo traveling around the world. And we want to hear from you about your travel adventures and your pro tips on how to stay safe while you're opening your mind to all that international travel has to offer. We're on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio, and we've got lots of comments coming in online. Melissa Mobley says, this is a great topic, but discussing it may also put women off of solo travel. Common sense you use at home, use it abroad. Bad things can happen anywhere. And Melissa says, don't let fear prevent you from seeing the world. Good point, Melissa. Well, on Facebook, Rachel Reju says, love traveling by myself or with a female friend, either in America or internationally. I find it very empowering, and it reminds me of everything I'm capable of. Rachel also adds, the only downside I've faced is being unable to use the restroom without dragging my backpack in there with me. Totally hear you, Rachel. Let's go to the phones. Kathy is calling from Clearwater, Florida. Kathy, you're on the air.
I am a beautiful, wild, free spirit. I just came back from 2 months in Europe. I went all over. I went to Bulgaria, which is run by the Russian mafia, which is another story, but yeah, common sense. Hey, listen to this, ladies. Get out there. Don't be stressed. Don't be fearful. I flew from Dublin, Ireland, back to Providence, Rhode Island for $75, ladies. Come on. That's the biggest misconception, is that you have to be rich to travel. I stayed in Fiji. I'm a white woman, and I stayed in Fiji in an all-black village. I was never so safe. And the stars, I could reach out and touch them. Ladies, get up off the couch and go travel.
Kathy,
do it today.
I love your call. You should start a travel podcast. I swear, Kathy, thank you so very much for calling. We're joined today by Carolyn Finney. She's a storyteller, author, and cultural geographer, and author of Black Faces, White Spaces. And I'd also now like to bring into the conversation Molly Fergus. She's with us from New York. She's general manager of Trip Savvy, a travel site that publishes travel guides written by locals. She's former associate digital editor for Condé Nast Traveler as well. Molly Ferg is welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Magna. So happy to be here.
So great to have you. I want to know from the view of the travel industry, is this a burgeoning market? I mean, giving guides and advice and travel services to women who are traveling alone.
Absolutely. So, you know, I can say from experience at TripSavvy, our editorial team is actually in-house. We are all female travelers. So even just that little microcosm, you can see how important this is to females everywhere. But then some of our most popular content is around safety for women who are traveling solo. And we have a lot of articles on this, and we see those numbers increasing all the time for people looking for advice on this topic.
Okay. So is technology then potentially a great tool for helping keep women safe when they're on the road?
It is potentially a great tool. It's also potentially something you need to be careful with, just like everything new, right? So it's a really great tool, TripSavvy. We have guides written by locals, so you can read those ahead of time and do your homework, as so many callers have recommended. But then you also want to be careful how you use technology. So if your face is buried in your phone, that's probably not going to help you stay safe when you're walking down the street. Similarly, you know, Instagram is really interesting because it's really made solo travel seems so accessible, but if you're actually posting in real time exactly where you are, you could be putting yourself at risk. So you need to think about the pros and cons of all the technology that we use.
Okay. And Carolyn Finney, what do you think about this, about the technology question?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I travel all the time, but all that extensive traveling I was doing, particularly in the 90s, in the late 80s and 90s, I didn't have any
right.
of that technology.
Yeah.
And so I've adapted, but I actually still, you know, I'm in Japan or other places, I don't use my phone. So there's for safety reasons, I understand the power of, you know, getting on Instagram or Facebook, you know, because you can always, in many urban places around the world now, you can go and get on a computer somewhere if you need to do that. But there's something about being present. Part of what increases, I believe, your sense of safety and security is the level of awareness you have about where you are. And I want to agree with what was just said that, you know, if your head is buried in your phone or you're spending time worried, thinking about social media, you're not present,
mm-hmm.
right? So, yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm a little old school, but I kind of come from that old school of doing all this. It's so interesting to me that this is now a big industry. And I'm going, I remember, you know, God, I sound old. But I mean, it's just like I remember doing all this all the time. And I still do it, you know.
You've gone to a place in order to experience the place and not necessarily see it through the sharp glass of your phone. Point completely taken, Molly.
Yeah.
So you were saying earlier that was it that everyone or almost everyone in your office are female travelers?
So at TripSavvy, our in-house editorial team, we have a team of six editors, and we are all female travelers. So you can imagine that when the New York Times article came out, we had a lot of feelings about it, our team. We were – it's a big topic of debate.
Feelings being what? What? Don't tease me. Tell me.
Just, yes, we understand all these concerns, and it's so scary, but then where does that leave us? Are we supposed to not travel? And I think your readers and all the listeners who have been calling in are hitting the nail on the head, which is to use common sense and to go out there and travel, but be smart about it. We actually put our heads together in the office to talk about a few things that we always look for when we're traveling solo. And it sort of comes down to at least three things, which is, you know, aside from safety, is one, you know, how easy is a place to get around? I always think about that, because if you're not thinking about taking taxis or having to drive yourself, then it might be a better place to visit because there's just a weight taken off your shoulder. We also think about how easy is it to get away? I think the question about cities versus rural was really interesting. If you base yourself in somewhere maybe like Reykjavik, there's a lot of great organized tours so you can get both your urban fix and your rural fix.
Right.
And then finally, I think a point is great is think about a city or a place where it's easy to eat alone. If you're traveling solo, you're eating three times a day. You don't want to be bothered every time you sit down to do that. So actually somewhere like Paris or somewhere like Amsterdam with a lot of cafes can be really great for that because it's normal to sit there and relax on your own.
Now, you know, what about traveling within, say you're in a city, and as we have more and more cities that have things like Uber and Lyft as well, because I love taking public transit wherever I go, because I feel like if you really want to get to know people and how they live, try and ride the buses with them. But there's, you know, there's also a sort of, you know, a safety trade-off there. But you could ensconce yourself in an Uber, I guess, but are you missing something instead of taking an Uber versus a bus?
Sure, I think so. I think we can all talk about the time when, I don't know, I've been to cities where I only took Ubers and I had no concept at all of the geography of that place or where anything was and what the different neighborhoods were. So I do think being smart and taking public transit when it's appropriate is a great way to get to know a destination.
Yeah, and Carolyn, I keep coming back to the fact that, you know, riding a bus or the subway in the United States can also lead to some uncomfortable experiences.
Yes.
As well.
Yes, and I've had the experience as well. I was thinking Nairobi in the bus. I'd just gotten off the airport, and this is, you know, back, you know, wearing your money belt under your clothing. And I was, and I met like three backpackers who I didn't know at the airport. We said, oh, we were all going to the same, you know, inexpensive place to stay. So we got on the public bus, and it was crowded. And one of the things that happens is there was a group of guys. The bus stopped suddenly, and the guys acted like they fell all over us in our bags. And what they were doing was feeling for the money belts.
Mm.
But I knew that they'd do this, right, because I'd read this. So there was no way they were getting mine because I was wearing a dress, and it was just the way they couldn't get at it. But I told everybody else around me, I said, just things like that happen. You know, I get on public bus. Who do you sit near if you have an option? You know, I make a choice sometimes about who I might sit down next to or whether or not I want to stand. Do I stay near the front of the bus where the driver is? I'm very talkative. So, you know, talk to the driver or somebody next to you, sort of make myself present, not make myself invisible. So then if something happens, everybody's going to see it because you've kind of made your presence known in a really positive way. And you're more likely to have a chance that somebody will help you out or even be kind of watching out for you in their own way.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about, I've been really lucky on my foreign travels. The worst that's really ever happened to me is I got a bag stolen in a train station in Rome. I had my big backpack and my like little backpack in front of me, and I was just targeted. Some guys, like, I didn't see them, but they sprayed what looked like bird droppings onto my backpack. And then some other guy, it was like a whole team effort. Some other guy came up to me and said, oh, you have something on your bag. Here, let me help you wipe it off. And as he was doing that, my attention was drawn away from my smaller bag. And a third guy just walked away with it. So, you know, I survived. I went to the embassy and got a new passport, whatever. But my question is that, like, tourists automatically, they stand out a little bit. But and as women, do you stand out even more? And is it better to actually to stand out? Can that be protective? Or Molly, do you want to try to blend in as much as possible? As much as possible, I should say, because it's hard to do so in places.
Yeah, I think there certainly can be a protective measure to standing out, depending on where you are in the culture. I think it goes back to doing your homework and getting to know the place that you're going. So on Trip Savvy, something we have a lot of in addition to travel guides are etiquette guides and cultural guides. And so you can read up on the place that you're going and know what you're getting into and then prepare appropriately.
Hmm. And so we should also ask Molly about, it's kind of been implied a lot in our conversation so far that when we're talking about solo travelers, that they are literally doing all the journeying on their own. But you can also be a solo traveler doing group travel as well. I mean, is that a great option for people?
Absolutely. I think this is a great way, especially if maybe you're new to solo travel. You've usually gone with family or friends. You want to go somewhere and no one has the same schedule as you. My gym actually recently they had a yoga retreat to Tulum. So you can check even just local community centers and the spaces near you to see what they may be offering. But then there's also, we have a roundup of this on Trip Savvy as well, an article on different tour guides. Tour groups that are catering specifically to women now. A great one is called Women Traveling Alone, and actually 80% of the people who go on their trips are solo travelers. So you know that you're going to have something in common because you all have this desire to be in the place that you booked that trip to.
Well, you know, let's go back to the phones. Liz is calling from Tampa, Florida. Liz, you're on the air.
Hi, everybody.
Hi. Go ahead.
Well, I was saying to the producers that one of the things I think is really important for women to understand, and travelers in general, is that you can't really believe when people are warning you all the time. People are scared, and people are always trying to tell you where you shouldn't go and what you shouldn't do. And someone had said something about listening to your gut. When I was traveling in Brazil all by myself, when I moved there in 96 at 21, I was always going places I wasn't supposed to go. I always had an amazing time. I never had a problem. And that has followed me throughout my life. When I was in Colombia and the FARC was supposed to be in control of things in 2000, every time someone said, don't go to an area, I would go to a different area only to find out the FARC was in control there too. And I was fine. And every time I travel, I've been to Haiti and I walk on the street and I'm the only white person for miles around who walks, because all the white people are in cars, or when I'm in Senegal, or when I'm in Turkey, I just go where I want to go within reason.
Yeah.
As long as you've got your wits about you, I think it's great to be even a little bit more adventurous. Don't
right.
let the fact that you're alone or the fact that you're female stop you.
Liz, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Erin, who's calling from Andover, Massachusetts. Erin, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Magna. You know, I have a slightly different story. I'm medically disabled, and for me, crashes are riskier to me than you know, getting attacked or things like that when I'm traveling abroad.
Mm-hmm.
But I still do travel abroad, and I think, you know, women. I think fear is suffocating at the end of the day,
yeah.
and I think. When you're traveling, going for a hike in the woods here locally, for example, or to a show in the city, is just as dangerous to me as traveling solo around Europe or other parts of the world remotely. And I find it very healing. And I'm very tall and a little eccentric looking, and I stick out like a sore thumb. Mm. I don't try to change that.
Yeah.
And I'm still never going to stop doing it.
Well, Erin, thank you so much for your call and for your perspective there about traveling being very healing. I want to sneak in one last call here because, my goodness, there are a lot of folks. Bobby is calling from Conway, New Hampshire. Bobby, you're on the air.
Hi there. I am a senior, and a year and a half ago, I purchased a conversion van and did a trip in the U.S. that I put 12,000 miles on the van, and I never had an issue, Now it was in the U.S. In between there, I snuck in a trip to Guatemala, and that was great, and never had a problem there. But you do trust your gut.
Yeah.
And you do, you say to yourself, okay, you know, would I do this in New York City? Well, if you don't, then you're not going to do it anywhere else.
Yeah. Bobby, I'm going to take it back from you because we've only got 2 minutes left in the show. But Bobby going on a 6-month solo U.S. camper van tour. Bobby, you lived my dream. I'm going to do this someday because I absolutely want to. Carolyn Finney, look, we've just got a couple minutes left here. I just wonder if we could leave folks with maybe another piece of advice or encouragement who maybe for the women out there who want to travel solo but haven't done it yet, what would you tell them?
I would say, I mean, because I love it. It changed my life. I tell everybody that when I first did that backpacking trip around the world, it changed my life. It's why I'm here where I am today. Read about people. There are some great stories out there. Tracks by Robin Davidson, when Sorrel Wilby crossed the Himalayas. I read about people, women who've done these amazing things with their lives in terms of taking that kind of risk. And to think about why you really want to do it deep down, it allowed me to see the limitations of who I am, which helped me then to push that edge a little bit and take the risk. I don't even know how to, if I was in front of you, just say, just do it. Not to sound like a commercial, but just do it.
Well, it is great advice for lots of things in life. Molly Fergus, is there something that you always pack in your bag that you don't leave home without when you're journeying abroad?
Oh, that's a tough one. I guess I'm going to add the doorstop tip now because I think that is the best. And this is cliche, of course, but a pashmina always, because I am always cold.
Yes.
Or have to sit on something dirty or need a cover up on a boat. Always a pashmina.
Yeah.
And maybe a couple.
Well, the doorstop one definitely, I think, is a brilliant piece of advice. So,
absolutely.
Molly Fergus, general manager of Trip Savvy, a travel site publishing travel guides written by locals. It was really great to have you, Molly. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Magna.
And Carolyn Finney, storyteller, author, and cultural geographer, author of Black Faces, White Spaces, Reimagining the Relationship of African Americans to the Great Outdoors. Carolyn Finney, it's such a delight to speak with you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Magna. This was great.
Let's hit the road, right? And folks, keep sending your comments to us at onpointradio.org, or we're on Twitter and Facebook, as always, at OnPoint Radio. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.